Let us all stand in honor of the scripture reading. It's from Isaiah chapter 9, verses 19 through 21. Through the wrath of the Lord of hosts is the land darkened, and the people shall be as the fuel of the fire. No man shall spare his brother, and he shall snatch on the right hand and be hungry, and he shall eat on the left hand, and they shall not be satisfied. They shall eat every man the flesh of his own arm. Manasseh, Ephraim, and Ephraim, Manasseh. And they together shall be against Judah. For all his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still. You may be seated. The 20th century has been the most violent period in history. Quote, their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their ways, and the way of peace have they not known. There is no fear of God before their eyes. End quote, Romans 3:15-18. The imagery that Paul uses here appears to have come from this section in Isaiah, chapters 9, 8 through 10, and verse 4 of chapter 10, part of which we read, where the prophet predicts the destruction of Israel because of certain sins. These include arrogance, false leaders, hatred, and oppression. Each sin is judged separately and followed by the concluding statement, quote, but his, that's speaking of God's, hand is stretched out still, end quote, in judgment against Israel. Are we still being judged today? It is possible that this passage is also prophetic of the world wars of our time. Notice that in verse 21, brother is fighting brother. Quote, Manasseh, Ephraim, and Ephraim, Manasseh, and they together shall be against Judah, end quote. In other words, these tribes are attacking each other at different times in history. We see Ephraim and Manasseh as the British and Americans who many times have fought each other, and together they have attacked Judah, which is Germany. Doesn't this sound like World War II? It sure does. We white men should not be killing each other. Instead, we should unite against our common enemy. And who is that? And who plots these wars? I think we know the answer to these questions. It must be noted that Germany did not bomb the city of Paris or other major French cities. Why not? Because the French had declared them to be free cities. In other words, those cities were not occupied by the French military and were not defended. Such cities and their cultural artifacts, architecture, etc., were not bombed by the Luftwaffe. That, however, did not prevent the British and Americans from bombing Paris and other cities later, thereby destroying cultural artifacts and killing many thousands of French civilians in the name of, quote, liberation. Regarding England, the city of Coventry endured a mere 380 dead from German bombs. Germany had endured a solid 5 months of bombing of its cities before responding in kind. While regrettable, that was tiny compared to the bombing of hundreds of German cities and towns and the casualties the Germans endured by the unprovoked British policy of targeting civilians. And I provided for you on the wall there a picture, aerial photograph of the city of Dresden. As you can see, almost nothing remains above ground. During World War II, more bombs by weight were dropped on the city of Berlin than were released on the whole of Great Britain during the entire war. All German towns and cities above 50,000 populations were from 50 to 80% destroyed. The great city of Dresden, dubbed the Florence of Northern Europe, was incinerated. Up to 300,000 civilians lost their lives. Everyone admits that Germany did some bombing of its own, but they did not deliberately target civilian populations as did the Allies. From the book Myth of German Villainy by Brenton Bradbury, I'm quoting this. Near the end of the war, most of the big cities and towns in Germany had already been destroyed, so small towns and villages were now being targeted for no reason except that they had not been bombed before. Thousands of innocent German civilians suffered horrific deaths every day for no reason except the whim of the staff officer who arbitrarily chose their town as that day's target. Everyone employed within the giant bombing apparatus continued to do the job they had been assigned to do, and no one in authority told them to stop. So the bombing continued day after day, night after night. Norman Stone, professor of modern history at Oxford, wrote in the Daily Mail, quote, "Already by 1944, we went on bombing German cities months and months after it had been clear that we would win and that Stalin would be as potentially deadly an enemy. Some of the bombing was just pointless. In the last days of the war, we struck at the old gingerbread towns south of Würzburg, where there was no military target at all, just refugees, women, and children. Of these acts of gratuitous sadism, the worst was the bombing of Dresden," end quote. Dresden was one of the most beautiful cities in Europe before it was bombed, a cultural center filled with elegant palaces, cathedrals, and statues. It was a fairy tale city with winding cobblestone streets, church steeples, and gingerbread houses. It had no military significance whatever. In the last year of the war, it had been a hospital city, caring for thousands of wounded German soldiers. Not a single German military unit was stationed there. In the early weeks of 1945, the coldest winter in a century, hundreds of thousands of refugees had flooded into Dresden to escape the advancing Russian army. The inhabitants of Dresden took in as many of these poor souls as possible, but it was not possible to take all of them. Hundreds of thousands of frightened, hungry, desperate refugees concentrated in the old town, camping out on the sidewalks and in every garden and every city park. They slept on the ground and huddled together to keep from freezing to death. Children whimpered and begged for food. City social services were overwhelmed, though they did all they could to try to feed and care for them. Then the bombers came. The first wave of bombers were British, which arrived over the city at 10 p.m. on February 13, 1945, dropping thousands of huge high-explosive bombs on the old town, thick with refugees, to blast the roofs off buildings in preparation for incendiary bombs, which were to follow close behind. The high-explosive bombs knocked out the air raid warning system, destroyed the fire stations, broke the water mains, and caused massive destruction and death. The crowds of refugees had no place to run and no place to hide. Then came the bombers loaded with incendiary bombs that turned the old town into a howling ocean of fire. Air temperatures rose to 1,100 degrees Fahrenheit. Winds up to 100 miles per hour sucked all oxygen into the center of the storm. Scores of thousands were burned alive. This late in the war, the science of bombing had been well worked out. The pattern of bombs dropped by the British were designed to produce a firestorm, and the Dresden firestorm was one of the most spectacular of the war. Thousands suffocated in cellars as the oxygen was sucked out by the flames outside. Thousands more were hurled into the air like rag dolls and sucked by the ferocious winds into the inferno. The air suction of the firestorm was so strong that it uprooted trees and lifted roofs from houses miles away. Utter panic struck the people. Horses reared and ran into the crowds. Wild animals such as lions and tigers escaped from the broken enclosures of the zoo and ran into the terrified crowds. Huge snakes slithered between the feet of those fleeing. Hospital trains, still filled with wounded soldiers from the front, were burning and tried to pull out of the station, and in the process, severing limbs from young children who had sought cover from the bombs underneath the trains. The next wave of bombers came 3 hours later with high explosives and anti-personnel bombs. The spacing of the waves of bombers, as well as the types of bombs dropped, had been carefully calculated to produce the highest kill rate possible. This third wave of bombers caught the emergency crews and fire crews, as well as throngs of those escaping the fires out in the open as planned. The result was a slaughter. The next day, February 14th, the American 8th Air Force completed the destruction of the city. During the bombing, a total of 1,300 British and American heavy bombers dropped nearly 4,000 tons of high explosive bombs and incendiary devices on Dresden. The most disgraceful episode of the aerial attack on Dresden was the American Mustang fighter planes that followed the wave of B-17 bombers. Swarms of people fleeing the bombs and seeking refuge on the banks of the Elbe River were strafed by the Mustang fighters. Piles of bodies were lying everywhere along the banks as a result of the strafing. The city was completely destroyed, and there were so many dead bodies that the German army sent units in to gather them up, pile them onto funeral pyres made from lengths of railroad tracks, and burn them. American POWs held in the city were brought in to assist. Kurt Vonnegut, the American author of Slaughterhouse-5, was one of them. They went through the cellars and pulled out all those who had suffocated or burned to death and then burned them. There were so many bodies that it took weeks to finish the job. They piled up dead soldiers, young and old women, boys in short pants, girls with long braids, Red Cross nurses, babies. These pyres burn day and night. No one will ever know the total number of civilian casualties resulting from the bombing of Dresden because of the countless refugees who had taken refuge in the city, but estimates have ranged as high as 500,000. British historian David Irving, who wrote the first authoritative book on the bombing of Dresden, estimates that 135,000 were killed. There was no military necessity for the bombing of Dresden. It was simple mass murder of a people we had grown to hate as the result of Jewish anti-German propaganda. Yet the bombing of cities and towns continued, even as the Reich was collapsing. Those who planned and carried out these bombing raids were and are war criminals by anyone's definition. End quote. Most Americans would be shocked. I was. The British and Americans involved in mass murder. Let's go on to Black Death. The plague referred to as the Black Death took place in early 1348 in Toulon, France. The Black Death was an epidemic of bubonic plague that killed about one-third of Europe's population in the years between 1347 and 1351. Establishment historians freely acknowledge that Jewish communities were much less affected by the Black Death than the European population. They also acknowledged that Jews chose not to use the common wells of towns and cities, and that suspected Jews confessed under torture to poisoning wells with dried up bits of rotted flesh from various animals. On February 14, 1349, Germans of Strasbourg, who blamed the Jews for deliberately spreading the plague, were burned at the stake. It became known as the Valentine's Day Massacre. Is it a coincidence that the destruction of Dresden was on Valentine's Day? Was it Jewish revenge upon the German race? Like elephants, Jews never forget. They keep track of their history and they keep score. Next is the city of Hamburg. Hamburg, one of Europe's greatest and most beautiful cities, was torched in Operation Gomorrah, July 1943. Following the Royal Air Force raids, the volcanic flames were hurled 5,000 feet into the sky, four times the height of New York's Empire State Building. The only surviving building was the city's cathedral. This building was not saved because of its spiritual symbolism. It survived only because it served as a bombing run marker for the Allied Air Forces, which, of course, was the Royal Air Force and the United States Air Force. Captain Sir Basil Little Hart, British war historian, had declared that through this strategy, victory had been achieved, quote, through practicing the most uncivilized means of warfare that the world had known since the Mongol invasions, end quote. Again from the book Myth of German Villainy, I quote, in the early days of the development of the bomber as a weapon of war, Winston Churchill said, quote, the air opened paths along which death and terror could be carried far behind the lines of the actual enemy, to women, children, the aged, the sick, who in earlier struggles would perforce have been left untouched, end quote, Churchill. Churchill's chilling vision of the capabilities of war from the air were finding fruition in Britain's air campaign against Germany. Estimates of civilians killed in the bombing range to well over a million, possibly as high as 2 million, with millions more suffering horrible injuries. Near the end of the war, when Germany was essentially defenseless and the bombing was most intense, German cities and towns, especially in the east, were teeming with masses of uncounted refugees fleeing the advancing Russian army. No one knows how many refugees, even to the nearest million. There has been a tendency in recent years to reduce the estimated number killed in deference to political correctness. Coming clean about the true nature of Allied atrocities against the Germans during the war is not a popular thing to do today. After all, we were the good guys. The British wanted only to destroy Germany and had no interest in making peace. Hitler, on the other hand, would have welcomed any chance to reach a peace agreement at any time during the war. Unconditional surrender was Roosevelt's and Churchill's answer. At the same time, they refused to accept anything short of surrender. Britain and the United States continued relentlessly to destroy one German city after another by massive bombing raids. The Nuremberg trials were conducted after the war, in which the Nazi leaders were found guilty of war crimes and executed or given long prison sentences. But those who sat in judgment of the Germans were no less guilty. The so-called Holocaust was invented at the Nuremberg trials to the absolute astonishment of the accused, who claimed that they had never heard of any such thing until the trials began. Considerable doubt has been cast upon Holocaust claims in recent years, But even if the so-called Holocaust were true in every detail, it would not compare as a war crime to the bombing of Germany. The word genocide is used against the Germans, but the bombing of Germany was the true genocide. It was also a culturecide. The bombing campaign was meant to destroy Germany completely and to kill as many as possible. German civilians were killed in masses, not because they were guilty of anything, but only because they were Germans. That is the very definition of genocide. End quote from the book. Hitler said it is always better, if necessary, to accept an end with dread than to suffer a dread which has no end. Just what is a just war? People have long debated this question, again from Bradbury's book. The 13th century Catholic theologian St. Thomas Aquinas and the Dutch Protestant Hugo Grotius of the 17th century worked out a just war theory to determine the morality of a particular war. For a war to be just, they said, one, first of all, it must be defensive in nature. Two, prisoners taken in war must be protected. Three, the war must be publicly declared by a properly constituted authority. Four, to be moral or just, the war must be winnable. A state cannot devote the population to a suicide mission with no chance of winning. Five, to meet the requirements of a just war, a war cannot result in more evils than it eliminates. Six, after the war is over, only those directly responsible for aggression can be punished. Seven, revenge is not a justification for war, nor is revenge justified after a victory. Revenge taking is antithetical to Christian values. Eight, a just war must not be directed at civilians. Nine, the decision to go to war must be taken as a last resort after all efforts to avoid war have been exhausted. End quote from the book. This was the policy of the Third Reich. The Allied command ignored it. How many Jews were there? Most churches repeat the Jewish story that, quote, Hitler killed 6 million Jews, end quote. Yet the 1939 World Almanac shows 15,688,259 Jews in the world, and 9 years later, the New York Times reported that there were between 15,600,000 and 18,700,000 Jews. If Hitler killed 6 million, how come there were no less in 1948 than in 1939? There were only 200,000 Jews in Germany when the work camps began, and many were allowed to leave. How could the Germans have possibly killed 6 million? According to the census records, the Jewish population remains virtually unchanged. Furthermore, in all the rummaging through the ruins after the war by the Allies, there has never surfaced the order given by Hitler to exterminate the Jews. Don't you think that if such a document were found, it would have made front page news? Now, there are various estimations. The plaque at Auschwitz today reads 1.1 million. Gerald Riedinger, a prominent Holocaust historian, estimated that perhaps 700,000 or so Jews perished. William Purcell said, the actual number of persons who died in Auschwitz between 1940 and 1945, when the Germans were running the camp, and that's before Soviet occupation, was some 75,000 souls, 63,000 of whom were Jewish, few, if any, of whom ever died from any gassing, end quote. Jürgen Graf estimates all camps, not just Auschwitz, quote, the number of Jews who died in national concentration camps cannot have been much higher than 300,000. Even if we assume that several hundreds of thousands of Jews transferred into the Eastern Territories succumbed to the harsh conditions prevailing there, and that the Germans shot several hundreds of thousands of Jews on the Eastern Front, both assumptions are rather improbable. The total amount of Jewish victims cannot have exceeded 1 million, so that the result of Sanning's and Nordling's investigation is roughly confirmed. No matter from which angle we tackle the question, the result is always the same. The 6 million figure is an insane exaggeration. End quote. A 1979 document issued by the International Tracing Service, which documents Nazi persecution, shows that the International Red Cross, which had access to the camps, believed the total dead from all camps to be 271,000. Information from the Simon Wiesenthal Center on the location of work camps reveals, quote, of the 24 concentration camps in Germany, Poland, Ukraine, Latvia, Austria, France, Czech Republic, and the Netherlands, four of which were holding or transit, some used for work and some for extermination. Six of the extermination camps were based in Poland, one in Ukraine, but zero in either of the Western states, Germany, France, or the Netherlands. Isn't that a suspicious anomaly? Why the East-West divide between work and extermination? Because there were no extermination camps in Germany. Could it be that Stalin has lied? Quote, if you know anything at all about World War II and the subsequent birth of the Iron Curtain, you know that no Western researchers, no aid workers, no religious groups, no Red Cross volunteers, no human rights activists, no investigative researchers, and no do-gooders of any stripe ever got a chance to poke around in Joe Stalin's communist post-war front yard of Poland or Ukraine. Hence, the holohoaxers, both then and now, can make any claim they want in regard to what took place in the airtight closed East. End quote from Michael King. Belief in the purely Eastern Front extermination holohoax necessarily requires blind faith in the press releases of Joe Stalin and his propaganda henchmen, as well as claims about the Eastern camps, which could never be verified. The numbers and the evidence simply do not add up to fit with the official narrative. So the question of how many Jews were deliberately murdered by the Nazis can just as well be summed up by this riddle. Quote, and we've heard this before from our friend, how many Jews can you fit in a Volkswagen? Two in the front, two in the back, and the rest of them in the ashtray. From, end quote from Andrew. The origin of the 6 million. The Jews claim 6 million of their people were killed in the Holocaust. But the number 6 million seems more like a metaphor than an actual number used again and again in Jewish historical storytelling. Where did this figure come from? Note, this figure was pushed before us even before the war had started and before any Jews were put in prison. And I'm giving you a timeline here. 1902. On page 482 of the article on anti-Semitism in the 10th edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica of 1902, for example, is found the words, quote, while there are in Russia and Romania 6 millions of Jews who are being systematically degraded, end quote. This reference precedes references to the 6 million of World War II by approximately 40 years. 1906. In the New York Times, March 25th, 1906 edition, an article titled, quote, Dr. Nathan's View of Russian Massacre, end quote, worried about the condition and future of Russia's 6 million Jews. The article goes on to say the Russian government's studied policy for the solution of the Jewish question is systematically and murderous extermination, end quote. 1911, Max Nordahl, co-founder of the World Zionist Organization, warns of the annihilation of 6 million at the Zionist Congress in Basel, Switzerland. This was 20 years later, or this was 20 years before Hitler came to power. 1919, in the American Hebrew Magazine of October 31, 1919, there appeared an article entitled, The Crucifixion of Jews Must Stop, by Martin H. Glynn, former governor of the state of New York. This article begins, quote, from across the sea, 6 million men and women call to us for help, end quote. The article goes on to include passages such as, quote, when 6 million human beings are being whirled toward the grave, quote, 6 million men and women are dying, quote, a bigoted lust for Jewish blood, in this threatened Holocaust, of course, quote, ad infinitum. The article was published approximately 20 years before the outbreak of World War II. 1921, the Chicago Tribune, July 20, 1921, an article headlined, quote, begs America save 6 million in Russia, end quote. The article claims Russia's 6 million Jews are facing extermination, end quote. 1936, in the New York Times, May 31, an article headlined, Americans Appeal for Jewish Refuge, appealed to Britain to throw open the gates of Palestine and let in the victimized and persecuted Jews escaping from the European Holocaust, end quote. 1940, in the Palm Beach Post, June 25th, an article reported Dr. Nahum Goldman, Administrative Committee Chairman of the World Jewish Congress, said today that if the Nazis should achieve final victory, 6 million Jews in Europe are doomed to destruction, end quote. 1943, the Polish Jew Rafkin Lemkin, in his book Axis Rule in Occupied Europe, was published in New York, claimed that the Nazis had already killed millions of Jews, perhaps as many as 6 million, end quote, he said. This would have been a remarkable feat by 1943, since the alleged extermination of Jews, according to the Jews, only began in 1942. 1945, in a New York Times article of January 8th, 4 months before the war in Europe ended, and before anyone could possibly have known how many Jews, if any, had died, it was reported that 6 million Jews were dead. And recent news just in. Israeli historian discovers 6 million Holocaust figure was invented at Zionist conference in 1944. This is just this month of 2020. Eric Stryker of TruthToPowerNews.com. And I'm quoting, Boston University's director of the Eli Wiesel Archive, Bar Ilan University Institute of Holocaust Research historian Joel Rappel, has discovered the origin of the infamous 6 million number. A 1944 meeting of Zionist pioneering organizations in what is now known as the State of Israel. For years, supporters of the Holocaust narrative have held that the number first appeared at the Nuremberg trials using highly discredited testimony by Auschwitz Commandant Rudolf Hess. The 6 million figure was again repeated by Adolf Eichmann, who was kidnapped by the Mossad and forced to participate in an internationally televised 1962 show trial in Israel. According to documents in the Central Zionist Archive, the first mention of the 6 million claim was at a meeting of high-ranking Zionist political figures in Palestine on January 19, 1944, more than a year before the war in Europe ended and a census could be taken, and a year before the Red Army entered Auschwitz. Rappel names Eliezer Unger, a Polish Jew who helped lead the Hashomer Hadadi religious Zionist youth organization, as the major figure in developing the count of Jews killed by the Nazis. After arriving in Palestine, he stated his intention to, quote, shock the entire world, all of humanity, and our brothers, the children of Israel in particular, end quote. Unger had no evidence for what he was saying, but he did not believe Rabbi Stephen Wise's assertions in the international media in 1943 of 2 million Jews being killed was making enough of an impact. After Unger met with Jewish groups and got them all on the same page, Haaretz published a small article a few days later that for the first time put the 6 million figure on record, preceding German military leaders tortured into making confessions after the war. It doesn't appear that Unger mentioned anything about homicidal gas chambers. The Haaretz article ends the revelation by quoting Eichmann's chief prosecutor, Gideon Hauser, who on the 6 million number stated, quote, in the consciousness of the nation, the number 6 million has become sanctified. It's not so simple to prove. We did not use this number in any official document, but it became sanctified, end quote. In other words, it's a lie. Continuing, after decades of killing, imprisoning, firebombing, and bankrupting Holocaust revisionists, it seems that the Jewish community is now being forced to recalibrate their narrative and give more ground. That they are now beginning to concede that the 6 million is nothing more than Zionist propaganda is a major blow to the myth. Well, that's good news. End of article from May 2nd. Obviously, Jewish claims of persecution, abuse, and predictions of extermination cannot be taken seriously. Quote, why, one might ask, amidst all the carnage, death, and destruction that occurred during World War II, has the so-called Holocaust emerged as the central atrocity story? Approximately 55 million people died during the war, only a tiny percentage of them Jews. Surely only a fraction of the 6 million claimed. All other combatant nationalities have long since put the war behind them and have tried to make peace with their former enemies, but not the Jews. Two-thirds of a century has gone by, but the Jews are still nourishing their grievances, still building Holocaust museums and memorials at various governments' expense, incidentally, and still investigating new ways to extort money out of various countries as compensation. But why should only the Jews be compensated? Scores of millions of other people across Europe lost everything in the war. A quote from Bradbury in the preface of his book. So much for the origin and history behind the 6 million figure. Holocaust lore. The Holocaust myth and the whole establishment narrative of World War II must be broken apart and revealed to the American public. I believe it is critical in revealing the kingdom of God. Quote, if the question is asked, what did Hitler and Nazis do to earn their dreadful reputation? The answer will invariably be the Holocaust. Yet the Holocaust did not occur, if it occurred at all, until after the war began, and only then as a result of the war. Yet the Nazis had been characterized as evil monsters long before the war began. But on what basis? Nothing had happened to the Jews up to the time the war began except for certain restrictions placed on them, despite all the false accusations of brutal repression and predictions of extermination constantly spewing out of the Jewish press. That reminds me, we have restrictions placed on us too, don't we? With this COVID thing. Holocaust revisionists have done a good job since the war of placing the Holocaust in perspective. There is no doubt that Jews were rounded up in Germany and Europe and sent off to concentration camps, many to relocation camps, though many Jews remained in Germany unmolested throughout the war. There is no doubt that these rounded up Jews were used as forced labor in the labor camps, and that conditions there were harsh, not only for the Jews, but for all other detainees in these camps as well. There is no doubt that many Jews died during the war, though certainly nowhere near the 6 million claimed. But there is no evidence whatever that Germany had a plan or a policy to exterminate all of Europe's Jews. And the same thing happened to many other people. The Holocaust has evolved over the years to become the national myth of the Jewish people with all the characteristics of a religion, complete with its very own Satan, Hitler. The Holocaust myth is the glue that holds the Jewish people together as a distinct nationality, and because of that, they carefully guard it and protect it. As a consequence, the poor Germans are consigned in perpetuity to the role of history's evil monster, regardless of what the actual facts may be. This is end quote from Bradbury in his preface. Just look at the TV a little bit, and you'll see examples of it. Hogan's Heroes, Rat Patrol, other things to discredit the evil villain Germany. Who was killed in World War II? The death toll. This is quite a list here. I'm not going to read all of it. The details are there in print on the website. British, 400,000. Americans, 420,000. Italians, 450,000. French, 500,000. Japanese, 3 million. Germans, 12 to 16 million. And it's broken down further here. Russians, 5 million. And there are some variations with that. Bulgarians, 30,000. Hungarians, 500,000. U.S. prisoners of war kidnapped by Stalin, 25,000 and hundreds executed. They were liberated from German POW camps in the east and shipped to Siberian slave labor camps, then abandoned by the U.S. government. Total killed in World War II, 400 million. Some say 72 million. Total killed in both wars, the Holodomor and the Bolshevik Revolution, at least 120 million white Christians killed by the Jews. If non-whites are included, the estimate is high as 260 million. Quote, it is estimated that more than 8 million Germans died during the war, but an astonishing 13 million additional Germans died after the war was over, the result of expulsions, mass murder, brutality, exposure, and starvation. 11 million attributed to General Eisenhower himself. That would be a total of more than 20 million German deaths as a result of the war. The estimated deaths during the war for the United States and Great Britain were 413,000 and 450,000 respectively. The claim that 6 million Jews died at the hands of the Nazis is patently absurd. Germany was clearly the real victim of the war, end quote, from Bradbury. Although Hitler lost the war because the Zionists were able to make backdoor deals to get the U.S. into the world wars via the City of London, he was the greatest hero of the 20th century. Were it not for him, the USSR that the Russians suffered under would have engulfed all of Europe. Is it any wonder that many have referred to Hitler as the Great One? to further prove that the Jews and their allies had been the aggressors in the World War, note the following quotes from them. Quote, "Thanks for the terrible power of our international banks. We have forced the Christians into wars without number. Wars have a special value for the Jew. Since Christians massacre each other and make more room for us Jews, wars are the Jews' harvest. The Jew banks grow fat on Christian wars. Over 100 million Christians have been swept off the face of the earth by wars, and the end is not yet." End quote from Rabbi Reichhorn, speaking at a funeral of the Grand Rabbi Simeon ben Judah, 1869. Quote, "Our race is the master race. We Jews are divine gods on this planet. We are as different from the inferior races as they are from insects. In fact, compared to our race, other races are beasts and animals, cattle at best. Other races are considered as human excrement. Our destiny is to rule over the inferior races. Our earthly kingdom will be ruled by our leader with a rod of iron. The masses will lick our feet and serve us as our slaves." End quote from Menachem Begin, Israeli Prime Minister, 1982. Certainly these quotes prove the parasitic and aggressive nature of the Jews. These statements also prove their attitude of supremacy and their plotting the races against each other to their advantage. Considering what is going on in the world, racism, defined as self-preservation, is the only way for the white man or any other race to survive. Truly the Apostle Paul was correct when he said, speaking of the Jews, quote, "Who both killed the Lord Jesus and their own prophets, and have persecuted us, and they please not God, and are contrary to all men." End quote. 1 Thessalonians 2:15. That is, they are opposed to all white men or Israelites. We must no longer allow the Jews to pit brother against brother in wars of genocide. Never again. To be continued.